KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome to the show. Beautiful, beautiful day today in Santa Cruz. Not a cloud in the sky. Though it was great to hear some rain this last couple days.
Yeah, we just got it all going on here.
That's as Mrs. Future, in case any of you were wondering. We just enjoyed the weather up there. The rainforest of the Redwood Mountains here is just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It rained a little bit more up there than down here, and it's kind of nice to hear a little pitter-patter on the roof.
Yes, a little pitter-patter on the roof. Also, we have apparently a baby hawk, which I hear calling for food quite often, living in the trees up there.
Asking its mom to bring back some nice, tasty mice
right.
That maybe that the Futures have caught for her.
Mice!
We do catch a lot of mice this time of year. Well, quite a week we're living through right now. A little tension and drama on the socio-political world.
Right. If you're paying attention to the warmongers in the world, you're having a tense week.
Yes.
If you are living the dream of the peace and love vibration on planet Earth, which is prominent, which is by vote and population much more prevalent, then you might not be that aware of all those warmongers.
It's a good idea to pay attention.
To beat the drum again.
But, you know, I do track these things. Oh, yes. Least we forget, we have Bruce Erickson in the studio visiting. Bruce, welcome to the show. You've been on before.
Yeah, I've been on before, and every statement I've made has been very forgettable. Okay, so then no problem.
He's kind of like the Ed McMahon of the Cosmic New Age, so stay tuned.
I'm in charge of the miscellaneous department.
Okay. Graduate of Hogwarts.
I'm graduate of Hogwarts, and anything that's weird or unexplainable, I make it even more so.
Yes, okay? So it behooves us to get Bruce's humor. And Mrs. Future, speaking of Hogwarts, you've discovered a new game that seems to be...
I woke up with this fantastic revelation that instead of playing solitaire, I could play a role-playing game. So I went and did a little research onto role-playing games.
Uh-huh.
And there's a very popular one that I did download that I haven't played yet that's a Japanese anime that basically allows people to celebrate their slavery. And so after I downloaded it, I decided, no, that's not the one for me. And I looked at what was the most obvious role-playing game for me, which was Harry Potter's. There's a Harry Potter's mystery game.
Suit your sensibilities a little more.
Really fun. Yeah. Just a really well-done role-playing game. I'm having a blast playing it.
And you are a student that has to take courses at Hogwarts?
Yes, yes. Currently, I'm number one on the leaderboard at Hogwarts.
Who are you playing against?
I'm in the Hufflepuff house.
The Hufflepuff house.
Yes.
Okay, as opposed to Slytherin or...
Yes, yes. No, my character is named Nineveh Peterson.
Yeah, I testify. I saw her flying her broomstick.
For the very first time.
Yeah, for the
just
first time,
before the show.
She got on her broomstick.
A low-level pass at high speed, okay?
She was very good. She got the accolades from the rest of the class and the teacher.
When I work in the medical and health field and we're doing seminars, I have kind of fun because there's some very innovative, incredible minds out there. And I said, pay attention, folks, aka these gentlemen and nurses all graduated from Hogwarts Medical School, so you know you're getting the real deal here. And everybody gets a good chuckle out of that.
Yeah, well, just let them know there actually is a game now. As to whether or not you can fly a real broomstick, we'll have to see.
Well, I can fly it in the real game. That's all I need.
Okay, well, that's all you need right now. In the real world, they've been lobbying drones and missiles around. I don't want to dwell too much on that.
I think it's good to report the news. The news is the news, but there are billions of people making news, not just the handful that think we should all go to World War III.
Yeah, and more significantly, there are other alternative websites you can check out besides the mainstream media. mm-hmm. on understanding those things.
I love that about the internet. And in fact, I think one of the cures for the mass obsession with negative news is to group all of the negative headlines under one search term. So anybody who wants to find negativity can go there and search it and leave that stuff off of the mainstream news that is the conversation the rest of us are having.
Mm-hmm. So in your reality, we could do that.
Yeah, I think it's inevitable.
Yes, and just finish it with Prozac ads, okay, so that you could get the cure right there.
No, I'm not saying to turn down our senses. I'm saying there's so much to pay attention to. Why are we giving all of our attention to this one dead narrative, this worship of death mind? Why aren't we giving it to the narrative of the beautiful future that we humans are always creating?
Well, I think that most of us can focus on the beautiful creature. I mean, the beautiful future. But some people are, as I...
You're looking at Mistress Future when you said that. Yeah.
The beautiful creature. Good. So thank you. That's very... Covers that really well. Thank you.
See, he's here to help, Al.
I know. Thanks, Bruce. I appreciate it. Some people are part of the species immune system and defend us from stuff that might kill us.
Absolutely.
And that's what they do.
And I trust them when they are defending us, but I don't trust them when they're manufacturing reasons for us to all kill each other.
Well, it's usually another branch of government does that. But yeah, there's teamwork involved.
When it comes to government, we're drowning in paperwork. That's a death sentence in itself.
Yeah, you don't think the computers have made a difference there?
Well, I have to say one thing about the news, and I'd like you to bring it up. When I get on my iPhone, for instance, and I'm tapping into the news, the one thing that strikes me is that I wish Apple and the other forces that are navigating the news had a lot more positive stories that are there. I think that they've taken a track that is the old adage with newspapers. You never see a positive headline.
Well, we tried that, though, Bruce.
They say if it leads.
No, you do it. You do it well.
It leads.
We tried New Earth News 20 years ago with Scott Katamas. And the thing is that at that time, at least, there's not enough people that listen to good news. Like, if it bleeds, it leads. And so attention, human attention goes
there. Well, fear is a very addictive emotion.
Yeah.
And if many people exist in a perpetual state of fear, in a perpetual state of being wounded, and they don't realize that that is the reality they're manufacturing. But once you start realizing that you are given this gift of time, and what you pour your thoughts and energy into is the experience that you contribute to the world. If you live in fear all the time,
then you're creating that for others to experience that too, and spreads
for higher options.
Sympathetic resonance.
But you also have to watch how people share it, like on Facebook. Oftentimes you get something really positive and even wonderful, and it just goes across the internet like a grass fire.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable.
That's true. You know, and that's what I'm talking about. That's like the real world.
So some memes that are super...
Well,
super
I mean, like, they see an albino animal or deer or anything like that, and all it's an explosion. Or some beautiful thing happens with a...
Flower animations or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got to go to a break.
Okay,
we'll
go ahead.
We'll be right back. And you're listening to Dr. Mrs. Future with Bruce Erickson in the studio, KSCO. See you in a moment. Okay, in the news this week, Iranian drones launched from Iraq. Possibly there's an Iraqi intelligence agent that thinks it came from Iraq. And this is via globalresearch.ca, which is a Canadian firm.
Yeah.
This was recommended by Mihai. The globalresearch.ca has an alternative view on many of the stories in the Middle East. They have their own intelligence sources, and this is an Iraqi intelligence agent that he thinks the strikes were planned when Saudi Minister of Affairs Thamer al-Saban visited Syria in June. He refused to say which of Saturday's drones were launched from Iraq, but he confirmed the distance between southern Iraq and the Saudi airfields was about half the distance the drone would have had to fly had they been launched from Houthi bases in northern Yemen. He says they had to travel between 500 kilometers and 600 kilometers whereas if they had been fired from Hootie bases, they would have had to cover between 1,100 kilometers and 1,300 kilometers.
So not what it appears,
at least not those kind of drones. We have links to this if you want to know more.
I'm interested in whether or not we can be tricked into going to war again.
Well, there's that level. That's an important conversation, more than the geeky details of the fact that it had a Chinese motor on it and stuff like that. But we won't go there. The important thing is that we don't go to war unless we really, really want to. And it doesn't seem like the American spirit has that in mind right now, I think.
What a waste.
Yeah. Yeah, usually it is. And if we look at how much we spend on the war mind, it's about almost 50% of everything the government does.
Mm. About 60%, yeah.
60%, really? Okay. Now, so I'm looking, you know, we're biological organisms. We have an immune system that fights friend or foe. They basically do what the military does. How much energy goes into our immune system over the overall energy of the human body? Is there anyone that knows that? And if so, then that would be, I think, a good guess at how much we should spend on defense. How much energy does the immune system take?
Well, I think we should spend a lot on defense from the idiocy that we get from the people that want to start the wars. That's a good way of applying the defense budget. We want to defend ourselves from idiots.
I see. So it should be an anti-idiot fund?
Yeah, yes.
Yes. I call the anti-idiot police. Yes. I'm really being bothered right now.
Yeah, I wanted to start the National Bullshit Index, okay, but I couldn't find chart paper long enough. Okay?
Oh, man, well. There's ways out of this, folks. There's definitely ways. In the second hour, we're actually going to have one of the thought leaders in our world who are thinking about this, Reverend Dev Johnson of the Inner Light Ministries. She's a thinker in these realms, and we'll see what she has to say about this. Did you know that the language of dolphins could be translated by 2021?
First I heard.
Can you imagine what they're going to say about the world's ocean and what we're going to do to it?
Oh boy, are we going to be in trouble?
Well, you see, that might be the answer, right? Because if we can harness dolphin intelligence, if it really is as high as they say it is, then we could benefit from it rather than see it as another enemy, right? We'd have some other intelligence on this planet that cares about this planet that we could connect with.
That'd be perceived differently depending on your political persuasion, okay?
Yeah, depends on where you're coming from, for sure. This was a Swedish startup called Gavagai, G-A-V-A-G-A-I-A-B. Get Lars on that, will you?
Well,
it's a language technology company, and it originated at the Swedish Institute for Computer Science. It's an AI that has mastered 40 human languages, 40. And with its language analysis software, they are now going to see if they can start getting into the language of other species now that they've pretty much figured out the human languages.
Well, look at Coco, the gorilla's statement on the state of the earth and environment. Those are well published, and there was some very intelligent things that Coco spelled out on that. What would you call that?
It's like a touchpad?
Yeah, touchpad, and those are readily available. I mean, it gives you an indication of what they're capable of. And that already happened with Coco.
Yeah, well, Coco's a fine example of how intelligent other species are and how they're part of the intelligence grid of this planet that we should be tapping for
solutions. Sounds like we're well on our way to the Council of All Beings.
Yeah, and we're on our way to find out there's something more intelligent humans.
We're getting fun now here. But in this world, it's talking to dolphins, and they're going to be working with some dolphins in captivity initially. Mm-hmm. Why is this so important? Well, it's a strange goal, but you know, zoologists would really like it. So would businesses. They say that massive companies like Amazon and Alphabet, they're already using machine learning and AI to respond to your customer requests and your problems faster than ever before. And this venture of the dolphins will be kind of the next level of testing for those kind of capabilities. Man,
so
I don't know if they're going to get dolphins.
Teaching the AIs to be sort of a Rosetta Stone for animal languages. Right? They've got 40 or so human languages, and now they're going to see if the methodology can be applied to animal languages, where we've got a lot of data from the dolphins.
Yes. The only problem is that they mostly have designed their AIs to analyze script or written language. So this is a big leap to begin to decipher purely audible languages. As far as we know, we haven't seen any dolphin script.
No, and also, what's the context of the speech? Because they might be pictorial in their language, like the Japanese language is very picture oriented.
Right, it's possible.
Yeah, and that they may be just projecting on, let's say, frequency or intuitive level, pictures, and that's their interpretive, that means you have to interpret.
Yeah, well, they're just starting to get into interpreting brain waves and dream space, beginning to look at correlations between what you're dreaming and what patterns the brain is generating, and converting those patterns into images as a part of the decoding process of dream space. Mm-hmm. So we are making some progress in that realm, and it may be with dolphins that the visual language is super important. I think I would agree with you on that. I mean, they can scan you and see an MRI in real time of your body as your heart's beating, your mm-hmm. lungs are expanding and contracting. The whole thing is self-evident to them, and that's a normal part of their reality. Well, to us, it's like a big deal MRI machine, you know.
And look at elephants can communicate with their feet. The pounding on the feet, the sensing on the feet is where they get their communications. All different varieties of way of getting communication. Interesting territory.
Yeah, it goes back to John Lilly in the early 60s and the research with dolphins back then in interspecies communication. Guest we've had on the show, Ed Ellsworth, who's worked with John Lilly over the years.
I can just imagine a dolphin giving the keynote address at the General Assembly of the UN.
Yeah, it's not that far off.
Yes, and they're all tanked up.
If Givagi can figure this out, then hey, you know. Would they be identified as a new country, though? Like John Lilly said that the cetaceans, the dolphins and the whales, should be called the cetacean nation.
I can just imagine what they say about our U.S. Navy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I bet they'd like to have a vote on where the U.S. Navy is allowed to.
Well, they do have intimate experience with it because the U.S. Navy has used marine animals, including dolphins, in its San Diego Space and Naval Warfare systems for some time. As far as we know, they use them for finding mines. And I've also heard that they have samples of different ship hulls underwater, and like a Russian trawler and a nuclear submarine, and they have all these different hulls, and the dolphins are shown them, and then they're shown a ship that's a mile away and asked to identify which hull matches that ship. And so they've been able to do that sort of thinking very well, so they can identify the type of ships they see. Now, a lot of that is no longer necessary because we have greater aerial surveillance of ships and sounds and analysis of AI. We don't really need to have the dolphins to do that so much anymore. So I think that probably most of that has been abandoned by the Navy. The dolphins can do something more interesting than just identify enemy mm-hmm. ships.
Sure.
That's what can they identify for us? The health of the planet? Do they have dolphin weather? No, I think we've just barely begun to see what's possible in terms of communicating with a whole other species. What if we thought of them as the alien species that were first contact?
That's a great idea. Yeah.
Just think of them that way for a moment.
How do we understand what they're trying to ask or tell?
Exactly. It could be quite interesting. From what I've seen in Hawaii, there are places in Hawaii where you can go as a tourist and swim with wild dolphins. They come in by choice and hang out with you.
I've done that.
So have you?
I did it in the Bahamas.
Did you have an experience?
Unbelievable. I can't even put it into words, but to be literally embraced by a mother dolphin is an experience that will be in my mind forever. We had an incredible experience with them. You could just see the intelligence, and there was one amusing incident where one of the people that came was really uptight and nervous and everything else. The mother dolphin came right up to his face and squirted water in his face as if to say, chill.
Take
I mean, it was
so
really
seriously.
Funny. They nailed him.
Complex communication system.
Yeah. We didn't miss anything. We didn't need any interpreter AI or nothing.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. Got to go to a break. I'll be back after our news break. You're listening to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. And Bruce Erickson's in the studio with us as we do the news segment. See you shortly. Hey, welcome back. Yes, thanks, Gregory. Gregory just pointed out to me that Rick Ocasek died a few days ago, the voice of the Cars, and we often use one of his pieces. Is Just What You Needed.
Oh, yeah,
Just What I Needed. It's one of our extras.
Right. So oh, honor. Thank you, Gregory.
Yeah, thank you.
Great historian.
It's all connected.
That's right.
Speaking of connected, we want to connect things that get lost sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what's happening with the lunar lander from the Indians. Mm-hmm. They lost their lander, as we know, for we were trying to land a couple weeks ago now, and sadly, it has not communicated at all since then. Uh-oh. Since that happened, the Indians had put up an orbiter with their lander. The orbiter had launched the lander, as a matter of fact, and the orbiter is still in orbit around the moon, and it has actually gotten pictures of the lander. It made it there, but it's at an angle. Didn't quite land straight.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was joking last week about how it fell into a pothole.
I fell into a pothole, right.
On the moon.
Yes, a lunar pothole made by the space elevator, which has yet to be made. So, but in the future, time and space are no longer something we don't traverse.
Okay.
Anyway, so back to the story. Today, NASA is tasking their lunar orbiter to take pictures of the Chandrayaan spacecraft, the Vikram lander of the Chandrayaan 2 spacecraft, and see if they can get any more clues as to why it's not communicating, mm-hmm. why it's not connected to the oneness of our communication grid here. What's going on here? So we should find out momentarily what happened with the lunar orbiter mission
momentarily,
today.
Really?
Yeah,
you're
it's happening
on it,
today.
Huh?
It's in this afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just want to mention that.
Got NASA looking for India's little Vikram, huh?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, in the space news, we had the first images of a mysterious interstellar comet called the Borisov Show.
Mm-hmm. This is the same comet that we looked at last year?
No, this is a different one. There's this really nice picture on our links page of this comet. Astronomers have gotten their first glimpse of what they call an interstellar comet. This is a comet that's not from our solar system, mm-hmm. from outside of our solar system, which is pretty rare. We haven't really seen a lot of those. And guess what? It looks a lot like the ones that are in the solar system. Same materials, same basic structure, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So how do you know it's from outside of the solar system, you might wonder?
I'm wondering
if
that.
If it looks the same in terms of its...
How do we know what solar system it came from?
Its trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
We can look at trajectories and calculate the larger trajectory on which they're on and see it's a trajectory that exits the solar system, giving its location, speed, the way it's playing with the gravitational fields, mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
So we just know this rock is not from here.
But its spectrum is similar to those of solar system comets, and that its composition must be very similar. So, okay, so there's a certain amount of sameness throughout the universe, which is a good thing.
You heard it here. Breaking yeah. news on Dr. Future Show. Yes. The universe is full of sameness.
Yes. They looked at the comet's tail. It's made of ice and dust, but it's not dust from here. It's dust from somewhere else. I would be interested in the ice dust itself because those are sort of the common ingredients found for life.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's some kind of weird alien life clinging into the space dust of the comet that it survived the millennia that it took to get to our solar system.
Mm,
hitchhiking a ride.
Just waiting for a nice planet like ours to spawn a new creature that eats carbon units.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I wish it would come in shaped like a Coke bottle, or that would shake everybody up.
Well, the gods must be crazy, Chris.
Yes.
Which you remember, that was the fundamental basis of that film. Drinking a Coke bottle out of an airplane. Having some African tribes do weird things with it. We're going to interstellar space. My guess is that this sort of thing happens all the time. We're constantly moving around in a giant orbit around the galaxy. So we're always going into new space dust around us all the time. And interactions with that space dust is probably how just about everything is created.
Garbage is everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Mm. Plastics are everywhere.
No, to the universe, it's not garbage. It's all pure potential.
Yeah, it's just molecules ready for to be activated.
That's right. You know? Looking for a story to be a part of.
Yeah, and that is the thing, too. If you start thinking more on a nano scale and how things could be reorganized on that level, it changes your view about how to create an industrial society.
Sure.
How do things happen determines how you create your experiences. Mm-hmm. So it makes a lot of things possible that our current paradigm doesn't accept.
Right.
Like, look at the recycling problem that we're having right now. All this recycling.
I thought you were going to say that.
Yeah. What's going on here? We're better than this. Mm-hmm. We know how to deal with plastic. I interviewed a young woman who has a startup who figures out how to break down plastic into its molecules and rearrange them and create more valuable compounds that you can actually sell on the market. So there are ways of playing with matter that we know about. We just need to implement.
Right. Yeah, we have to obsolete the idea of trash and turn it all into cycles.
Yeah, one person's cycles. Trash is another's gold.
And another thing about plastics is that in the tests in India and elsewhere, if it's combined right with road-making material...
It can make roads.
And
yeah.
They're far more durable, and they hold together better, and they wear better. That's been proven out quite extensively, both in Europe and other countries. And yeah. I don't know why we don't do it here.
Well, whole system thinking is kind of new. As a planet, we're only maybe one or two generations into the idea that we're one unified planet, right? The blue marble picture of the Earth when the astronauts went to space really changed the way that people were looking at this planet. And instead of having the constructs that when you draw a line at the border, that's who I am, and the people on the other side of the border are the people who aren't my people, instead we started looking at the whole planet of all of us.
Planetary ecosystems.
Right. All of us are putting trash in the ocean. All of us are putting pollution into places where it shouldn't be. We have to start thinking in a new way.
We send our trash to the Chinese and then they dump it in the ocean. It comes back to us. Something like that.
You know, I just read an article that a lot of the trash that's in the ocean now, it has been there for decades, and that what happens to most trash is that it gets washed up on shore. And one of the big concerns of the people who are trying to clean up the ocean is that we've barely gotten any of the actual pollution into the ocean yet, and it's going to just keep getting worse.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
It doesn't look good.
Yeah, pretty soon we'll be fishing for plastic fish.
Yeah, well, pretty soon you'll be biocybernetic and need to eat plastic to live, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, well, we're sure going to have to understand a lot more about plastic and how to make it serve our purposes.
All kidding aside, we do need to look at this more deeply.
And to all those listeners, please don't take every statement we say on the station seriously. Please do not. Discernment is advised.
Especially Bruce. Yeah. Okay, then. So, yeah, plastics are good. And I think we're going to do a special show on that coming up.
Yeah.
Ed Snowden explains himself. I don't know if you've heard any of the interviews this week. He's written a book about his whole exploits after 6 years in exile. There's a really interesting article in Wired magazine about him and being one of the world's most famous whistleblowers. And he talks candidly about his belief system. And he's interesting, different consciousness than the baby boomers, because he was brought up in the cyber culture of the 90s.
Yeah, he's our generation. We are the people who released the beautiful internet to the world thinking it was going to solve all our problems. And it did. For 20 years, we had people who were excited to learn to be literate in this new way where they could connect to people all over the world in ways they had never done before. And it was before the era of bullies and trolls and central power abusers who want to own the pipeline. And it was really the beginning of the new nervous system of the planet, where information wanted to be free and we wanted everyone to have access to it, and we weren't so busy trying to make it impossible to get into that we can't even get into our own home pages or whatever. It's come a long way.
Yeah, it is. It's an evolving world. He loved the Hacker Manifesto, which John Perry Parlow, the Declaration of Independence of Cyberspace, those are influential teenager events, which we ran into. We've had my run-ins with John Perry Parlow and the hackers.
Rest his soul.
Yes, I've known many hackers. So I can relate to that. Neal Stephenson is one of my favorite authors. He definitely relates to that. Snowden writes that he sees this Declaration of Independence of Cyberspace, for example, as next to the preamble of the Constitution. And so the internet of the 90s was the most pleasant, successful anarchy he's ever seen.
Yeah.
He even met his wife online at hotornot.com. She was hot.
All right, the good old days.
And he points
before
out...
Before all the mean people got involved.
And he's been belittled as saying he was just an IT guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just an IT guy. Mm-hmm. What he points out is that IT guys play a big role in this cyber world. You ever type admin? Admin, you ever know kind of powers admin has in cyber worlds?
That's it. They determine who gets an account and who gets locked out and what gets allowed in.
Yeah, so it's whole mythos that he's trying to outline, and it's in his new book that he's just coming out by Ed Snowden. You can hear it's called Permanent Record. And I just heard that the government is trying to sue him to collect all the money that he will make from this book, because there are people in the NSA structure that particularly don't like him.
I wonder if they're going to sue him for libel or just for truth.
Oh, well.
No, they're envious because they didn't get that much royalties for their book.
Healthy bodies for 35 years.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show and our bad boy Bruce in the studio here. Yes, we've had to teach him a few things about proper etiquette on the air, but he'll be good now, we promise.
Mm-hmm. I promise, yeah.
Okay, interesting story. If you, when you download, it's not if, it's when, you download the new iPhone software update coming out, iOS 13, you will find out when groups like Facebook are harvesting your data using your phone through Bluetooth and other background activity that they're
utilizing. I want that app. What app is that?
It's just the standard iOS 13 coming in on the iPhones that will reveal the secret transmissions from your phone to the cloud.
Okay, right. So the new operating 13, system is going to show you who's spying on
it's
you.
It's got a slew of privacy measures that'll notify you when your apps are covertly tracking you.
Mm-hmm. Like if you didn't give them permission.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So it gives you a little more control over what data you share.
It gives you control, but it's so complicated. Every service that asks me to address my privacy settings, it just blows my mind how many things I have to think about. Do I say yes or no to this? And am I locking out the people that I want and failing to actually guard my own privacy? I mean, it's so complicated.
Yeah, maybe we should do a show on just that topic alone, just to unravel
some
the intricacies
privacy
of privacy.
Right.
You know, how to turn on what and off on Facebook.
Well, one has to take a look at really what the sharing is. It's mainly to drive commercialism and selling ideas.
Well, not always. But sometimes you want that. I've been looking at laptops lately, and I love it when it points to me new laptop possibilities. Oh, you like that little drone? You might like this, and it shows me something that I might like. And I like kind of like that element of it, where it serves me. But when it doesn't serve me, is when I get a lot of what they call junk mail or spam.
Right.
It has no relevance.
How do you draw the line between wanting the machine to help you versus giving the machine control over things that you want to have control over?
Well, that's why they have so many choices, because they don't know and they want you to tell them.
And sometimes they way overdo it. It's months go by and you're still getting the same silly ads. But there's another very important point.
Yeah.
There's an American general told about all the data collected by NSA.
Uh-huh.
He said very little of it is any use at all,
mm-hmm.
because it's just a bunch of noise.
Yeah, well.
And studies in telecommunications have revealed most of the exchange of information across the globe is nothing more than gossip. It's even way bigger than news and financial reports.
Gossip.
And business. Just gossip.
Yeah.
And the Annenberg Foundation study is the one that did that study.
Yeah, well, gossip is always sold. But for some reason, gossip's a very popular form of communications. Why is that? Do you think, in your deeper understanding of the human psyche here?
Oh, well, we have to have some entertaining conversation.
Why do we like gossip so much? Why is it so? Because you get to know something you're not supposed to know?
Yeah,
or it gives you power in some way?
Gossip is talking about people, and people are interesting.
Yeah, that's the most interesting thing, is ourselves, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, and everybody wants to know everything about everybody, because that's how you can know what's interesting in your world.
Mm-hmm. But
and of course, secrets. once you start embracing secrets, then you get this whole hierarchy of who's in the know and who's not in the know. But so people are playing with that at the level of exchanging gossip.
Yeah, well, it seems like we have to have secrets. I mean, look at your computer usage. How many times have you had to do a password? I mean, that's a secret. Right? I mean, it's integral to the structure of the way things are.
I feel that the need to use passwords is somebody else's issue that they are forcing me to have to deal
with.
They're
forcing you to have secrets?
Yes.
That you shouldn't have to have passwords?
I shouldn't have to be that defended in a space that I inhabit with my information. Hmm. In fact, I think this is why Tim Berners-Lee is redesigning the internet, is because
the original designers of the
The way that internet is handled right now is the information wants to be free, but it's not owned by the people who are putting it out there. The people who are putting it out there don't have control over it. And so that's back to the Ted Nelson model. You know, Ted Nelson wanted the internet to be like the real world, where things exist in one place and then those things get linked to it. And
that's Project Xanadu. That was a version of the internet before the one we adopted, mm-hmm. designed here in California.
Yes, which is a nice ideal, but when you get a whole bunch of people who all want to add their creativity to a project, you get chaos because everybody adds a small piece to a bigger picture. But the architecture of the internet, there was a company called The Grid that wanted individuals to own their own data and publish
right
to their
the
own source.
Back in the early 90s, right?
Right. And of course, that didn't have a business model. And so once people started saying, well, we have to get paid to use the internet and it doesn't cost anything, so we have to invent value. So we have to come up with a way to charge people money for it. It started becoming this advertising propaganda marketplace. And that is not really the original internet.
Yes, I agree. But it is kind of nice being able to get anything you want overnight.
Absolutely. Well, it comes down to there's a lot of people who want to use information to help each other. And sprinkled in with all those people who want to be helpful are people who want to do something negative with that information and harm someone.
If you look at the early days of the internet, when it was SIG, special interest groups, and people were in diverse areas, we could be in Canada and Florida, if they had a common interest, and they would share information and data, whether it be on collecting cars or building furniture or health or what have you. People seem to forget that that was a springboard of the early development of the internet.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I remember those days, the 80s. Everybody had their own databases.
Yeah.
We found in the medical world, for example, there were dozens and dozens of databases and they were all separate.
I worked on the source and the original development of the internet.
Yes.
And one of the first
source.
Things that happened was, it was a comical thing that happened. And
it was around 1980?
Yeah, right around there, 1979, 1980, and the early days of when we became an explosion of exchanging recipes that all had to contain liquor. It was during the holidays, and the demand was so great, the chairman of the company said, I think we got our marketing plan all wrong.
Yeah. Well, the good parts of the internet are still out there. We just went to a meetup last weekend. There's still people who are finding each other based around what they're interested in. There's much more connectivity than ever before in history.
Yes, and it's a fascinating thing to observe, because the internet doesn't seem to be controlled by any particular boys club, from what I can see. It's not really controlled centrally by anybody, but everyone is trying to control it and trying to implement their model of understanding how to use it on anyone who wants to listen. So we're seeing a lot of competing belief systems all happening at once. And as such, I think of it more as a species nervous system, like, or a collective, a group mind that is just collecting all the experiences and ideas and elements of humanity all in one place that we have access to.
And we have the problem that some people are better expressing online than they are face-to-face, person-to-person.
Yeah.
And there's been kind of a breakdown.
Yeah, through texting.
The personal skills of conveying
it's different.
An idea,
yeah.
And
knowing how to text
areas,
is different than talking.
There's some difficult areas that need to be overcome there.
Wait till we are able to exchange pictures as easily as words. Perhaps that's where we start to intersect with other species, like the Dolphin Communications Project we were talking about earlier, where we begin to see that other species on the planet are already thinking visually. And we just are beginning to become aware of that.
And the dolphins teach us a whole new language and a whole new way to communicate.
Yeah, which that, could solve some of our big problems in thinking
about.
Yes,
it could be a much better dating service, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, before we go to the middle of the show break, I wondered if you want to say something about giant redwoods.
Yes, there's been some success in saving the redwoods, even more so in our neck of the woods, shall we say. Mm-hmm. The world's largestly privately owned giant sequoia forest was recently bought for $15 million. It's a 530-acre Alder Creek property in the Southern Sierra. It's a Bay Area conservation group. They signed a deal to purchase this primeval landscape in the southern Nevada. These are trees, 250-foot tall trees, 80 feet around, 2,000 years old, amazing creatures. This is now safe. They've got more trees than the famed Mariposa Grove at Yosemite National Park. It's the most coveted sequoia conservation opportunity in a generation, according to many there. It's a deal. It's closed, so now not any of those trees will be hurt, and eventually they'll be open to the public. Right now, they've got to see what the best way to create a public pathway through them is.
All right, so thank you, Save the Redwoods League, and we're going to go to traffic, news, and weather here on the Dr. Future Show, so come back and join us after the break.
Yeah, we'll be talking to Reverend Dev and the Inner Light Ministries and what's happening next. Okay. So thank you for listening. We'll see you all in a few.
This is KSEO Santa Cruz.
Yeah.